This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And here we are. We are live both on Instagram Live and on Pet Life Radio. Here for you. Sorry, everybody, for the change in time, but I just literally just landed about 25 minutes ago. So I was in Chicago. Great town, by the way. Everyone was warning me about how unsafe it was. It was fine. It was totally fine. I was talking to one of the Uber drivers. He said, you know, there are spots like on the south side that could be a little tough. You know, you wouldn't want to walk alone by yourself at night in some of these streets. But in downtown, where it's like so bustling, it was so great there. And the weather was amazing. Boy, it was much, much warmer than I thought it was. Yesterday, woke up to thunder, lightning, pouring rain. And literally, that was like at 6:30 in the morning. By 9 o'clock, the sun was shining. It was crazy. It zoomed through so fast. And I was actually really surprised. And then at night, it was like, you know, it's shorts weather. I mean, it's really crazy. So anyway, no, it was good. It was a smaller meeting than I'm used to. Hey, Deb. But anyway, to get a hold of me, questions, I hope you have lots of questions or things we can talk about. First of all, here on Pet Life Radio, 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. Just chime in, ask your questions. You can type them. You can join us here on Instagram. You know the drill. You know what to do. And I would love to hear from you. Any questions you may have. One thing that I got from this show, this trade show, it's not as grand as, like, you know, I go to VMX, that's the one in Orlando every January. There are over 20,000 people there. It's crazy. A month later, in Vegas, in the Western Veterinary Conference, there's about 19, also 20,000. They always battle who's got the most. The thing is, the one in Orlando, it gets more international because it's on, you know, on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. It's not that terrible to come to Florida, but I mean, to come all the way then to Nevada, it's a little tougher. So anyway, but really, really, those are busy. This one was a little bit more, kind of, well, it was a lot smaller. So it was more easily engaging, like when you want to engage these people to come out of the booth. And also because it is a American Animal Hospital Association. Hospitals, when I had my own hospital, I was AHA. It's called AHA, American Animal Hospital. You get it. Anyway, only about 20% of animal hospitals in the country qualify to be AHA certified. So when you look at it that way, and it's rigorous, it really is. I remember every 3 years we had to go through, I mean, it's soup to nuts. They check everything. It's almost like remember the old Good Housekeeping seal of approval? That's kind of what AHA was. If you were an AHA hospital, that means you met standards that are even higher than your state veterinary medical association boards. So it was, you know, it was like something you can, you know, put a feather in your cap. Yeah, oh, I'm an AHA hospital. So you could still be an AHA member, but obviously the hospital I'm at now is a small clinic and it's not AHA. And I don't know if I want to be to AHA again. But anyway, Deb, question about 10 milligram Zyrtec, okay to use. Here's the thing. This is my philosophy, my theory, but I've seen it again and again and again. So first of all, is histamine a major player in the canine allergy? And the answer to that, you know how I'm asking, no. So to give an antihistamine against a cellular mediator that's not involved in the allergy, it's why you're doing it. Maybe some say maybe 10% is histamine related. It's really not a big player. Now we know now, that's why we use Apoquil and Cytopoint. It's interleukin 31 is the equivalent of our histamine. That's what sets up the whole bad reaction. Now, I often recommend Benadryl and chlorotrimetan, chlorpheniramine. Why? I just told you that histamine is not a big problem. You know why? It's because the sedative effect. It does chill them out a little bit. So it makes them a little more comfortable. They're not as willing and eager and going crazy because they're just a little more chill. Now you look at Claritin and Zyrtec, which are the non-drowsy. Well, now what? You can't even get any benefit from them, except maybe the 10% in any individual dog that is histamine affected, histamine related. So my recommendation, if you're going to use an antihistamine, and I'm not against it, make sure it's good old-fashioned diphenhydramine, Benadryl, or chlorpheniramine, which is chlorotrimetan. Those are drowsy. You want the drowsy if you're going to use them at all. 7-month-old pup only has one drop testicle. We talked to the breeder, said that we can just remove the one. And no, wrong. That is terrible advice. Terrible advice. Why? We're more, you know, of course, for the breeding aspect and some of the behavior aspect. Well, first of all, if you leave the testicle in the abdomen, okay, you're going to get all the behavior issues that you're trying to avoid by neutering. But more importantly, when a testicle is sitting in the scrotum, it is exposed to ambient temperature, roughly 75, 80 degrees, maybe during the summer in a hot place, Chicago today, 90 degrees. But no, it is much warmer than body temperature. Body temperature is up over 100, and it's 102 and 103, up to 104, right? So the testicle that remains in the abdomen that is exposed to higher temperatures, that's what's going to cause more likelihood a cancer of that testicle. So the reason why, if you're going to leave a testicle, leave the one in the scrotum, all right? They can still breed, but they shouldn't because it's transmitted. And that's another problem. If you leave that testicle in the abdomen, they're still males. They're going to have testosterone. They're going to make sperm. They're going to all those things. And they're going to pass that trait on potentially to their male offspring. It's a lose. It's a no win. So you do not want to leave that testicle. I think that is the breeder's answer to have you not worry and say, oh, it's okay. He's still going to be all male. If that's the case, why neuter in the first place? And if you only really wanted to keep a dog intact, you would still go after the one in the abdomen because that's the one that's at risk of cancer. So I don't know who this breeder is, but this is not good advice at all. And we should definitely do. And you know, the truth is that the surgery is not that complicated. I mean, yeah, sometimes it is. I've gone in there sometimes, and I finally found it, search. It was like because of the anomaly, because of its, you know, where it's coming from and how poorly it was developed, it was the size of like a kidney bean. So, yeah, but most of them, you go in periprepucial, right along the side of the prepuce, and you open up, and it's usually sitting right there. It's not that hard to find. So now also, there's a better argument, which I still disagree with, that if it's in the flank, in other words, it got through the inguinal ring, it's sitting in the flank, you can actually palpate it under the skin. So it made out almost all the way, just a little short of the scrotum, then now it's not as exposed to the same hot body temperature. It's still warmer than what's in the scrotum because scrotal tissue, as you know, is very thin. But it's still, one could argue, if you really wanted to argue with me, that if you're going to leave one in, at least it's out of the body, then that would be more likely to be okay. But I still would not recommend it. Get your pets neutered, especially if they are a monorchid or a cryptorchid, which means both testicles haven't descended. Boy, what a way to get me started on a nice Sunday morning. As soon as possible. I mean, it doesn't have to be like tomorrow, but you want to do it in the next month or so. Yeah, I mean, you're going to get it out anyway, but you have to say, why did you want to neuter anyway? For whatever reason you wanted to neuter, that's the same thing with this testicle. Whether it's because of behavior, whether it's because you didn't want them to breed, whether it's because aggression with other dogs, whatever it is. But you still want to get it out. All right. Roberto, hello. How are you? So, yeah, we can do it, Blake, anytime. Well, you see, Blake, even though you're not working with us anymore, Blake was a volunteer, so she's great. But now you're still learning from me, which is good. Okay. So Zyrtec we talked about. So let's talk about a few other things. Unless you, when you have questions, just pop in, and I'll be happy to answer your questions. But one of the big things that we're seeing now, AI in practice. And I mean, I use ScribbleVet. It's an AI scribble. Basically, it records our exams. It puts it into what's called a SOAP format. It is so versatile. It can do so many different things. And I absolutely love it. It citates, gives you research papers if you want to access them based on a particular differential that you put. You click on it and it works with something called LifeLearn. And it's great. And you can do a surgical write-up. You can do radiographic reading. You can do just formatted dictation when I'm reviewing lab work. You can do SOAP format, three different kinds of SOAP format. There's a classic. There's the one that I like, which is a little bit shorter. And then there's the specialists have their own SOAP format. I mean, it's really, really good. Oh, dentistry. It does the whole dental chart, which is great. Then it also generates a report card at the end of the visit for the parent. It also sends an email if you want to the parent, records from another hospital. It's great. You can basically put them all in the file. It scans them and you copy the PDF and it summarizes them. So you don't have to go through all the nonsense. It'll take 50 pages of notes from another hospital and turn it into 5 pages. I mean, it's amazing. So anyway, so that's a good use of AI. I don't Oh, I mean, AI and radiography. Oh, my God. There are radiology companies now that will use AI to read films. And then the board-certified radiologist will just review them. And you can opt for, that's obviously, if you use the radiologist, that's going to cost more money to the doctor, which means more money for you. And you can opt for just the AI. And they feel that it's really so accurate in many ways. And it is in many ways. Secondly, you can also eye disease. It can recognize things. I mean, gait analysis. I mean, this is unbelievable. Now, is it going to replace a veterinarian? Absolutely not. You still need those eyes. You need to see what's in front of you. You need to feel. You can't have a conversation, a really fast conversation individually. Now, you can ask ChatGPT all sorts of things, and it'll answer you. But you can't ask a specific thing about a pet that ChatGPT doesn't know who it is and has never seen. So there's no fear in my book. I've never seen an AI do a surgery, draw blood, put a catheter in. So, you know, unless you want to get to the point where Waymo is of complete robotics, then we may be in some trouble. But if that happens, trust me, it ain't going to be in the next 5 or 10 years. And that's all I got left in me. So I don't think I have to worry about that. But, you know, you never know. I mean, if you ever drove alongside a Waymo, it's fascinating and it's really scary. It's got like a brain of its own. I'm just shocked and amazed, but it's so cool. And yeah, marking, he won't stop. Now, that's the thing, Blake, if you leave that testicle in, he's still a male, he's still gonna mark. It makes no sense. I would like to get a hold of your, you know, this is the same thing I get when these breeders who have, you know, I think sometimes breeders, when they become breeders, they think they just got a DVM degree and their vaccine schedules are so outdated. And not only outdated, it's dangerous because they're starting these vaccines too early, interfering with mom's passive immunity, and you're leaving a dog with no protection. And they're too young at 6 weeks or 5 weeks. They're too young to make their own antibodies. Their own immune systems aren't developed enough. So you're leaving them as sitting ducks. It's nuts. So I remember once I was so incensed. I mean, I was shocked that these people are getting this advice. Breeders. So I called this breeder and I said, I was very nice, very nice. And I said, hi, my name is Dr. Roy. Just saw one of your pups. Oh my God, what a beautiful dog. And one thing I noticed is that you started the vaccines at 5 weeks. There's a lot of new data out now about vaccine schedules and when you should start and what are the ramifications of starting too early. And I explained them to her very nicely. And instead of saying, oh, which I would have expected, oh, thank you so much. That's so good to know. It was, listen here, Sonny, I've been doing this for over 40 years. I think I know what I'm doing by now. And I'm saying, okay, that's what I'm dealing with. That's what I'm dealing with. Someone who thinks they know everything, as we always know. You need to know what you know. That's important. It's more important to know what you don't know. But what gets you into trouble is when you don't know what you don't know, i.e. you think you know it. And that's here's a perfect example of that. So, Todd, how you doing? Come on, I'm loving, I'm saying hi to all these wonderful people. Well, there's an arthritis injection. It's called Adequine. And Adequine is, one of the docs talked about Adequine, and it's really great. It is the original polysulfated glycosaminoglycans. It's like a glucosamine. It is. It's glucosamine, but it's much more effective. So it came from the horse world where they used to inject horses intraarticularly inside the joint. And for people and dogs, not every general practitioner knows can do that, called the joint tap, and make sure they're in the joint, doing it without hurting anything, without damaging cartilage. So it was left up to the orthopods. Now we have learned that you can use Adequine intramuscularly, and it does the same thing. It travels through the bloodstream, lymphatic system, it hits the joint, and it does protect the joint. It helps rebuild cartilage. It helps minimize some of the inflammation. I mean, it's great. Here's what this guy said, though. So normally when we do it, we start with the first month. It's twice a week for a month. After that, you do just once a month, almost like a boost. And what Dr. Campbell was saying, Courtney Campbell, who's great, love him. He said that the half-life is only 72 hours, 3 days, which is why you do it twice a week when you're using it. And he said that, where did this once a month come from? It came from the manufacturer, he thinks, because he wanted to make it more attractive for both the veterinarian to want to use and the client to have the veterinarian use it. You got to be okay. But he says, if you're going to use it, he says, in his opinion, you really need to do it twice a week, like all the time. And then it gets really, really expensive. Now, I've had many of my clients that have gone to this once a month kind of a booster, and they do fine. The argument there is when you repair the cartilage by doing it twice a week for a month, Now, it doesn't ruin overnight. It's going to take a while. So as long as you reboost it once a month, then they feel that is good enough. So I'll have a little chat with my friend Courtney, but that was that's what I've heard about. Regenza, are you talking about the new Apoquil medication? Or is that maybe that's the shot they're talking about? Because Regenza regenerative, if that's the case, hey, Lynette, if that's the case, I want to do some more homework on that. There's Librela, which is the new pain medicine. We can talk about that in a minute. There is Adequin, that's just sort of getting a rebirth. I'm not familiar with the Regenza. And you know, understand that as a busy doc, where do I get a lot of my knowledge? Of course, when I go to these trade shows, but from the drug reps. And when I don't know about something, I'm blaming the drug rep of that company not coming to see us, because they should be priming us and prepping us on these new meds. So that's important. I know there's a new medication for like a sedation dextromethor that you can use for like a mild in-office simple procedure, like going after like exploring a wound that you might have a foxtail. We used to use dextromethorphan and then reverse it with antacetin, but there are some issues with that one. We call it dextromethor because it really suppresses the heart rate. This new one, it doesn't. So I'm going to look into that. Let's see, what natural med herb could we give a first time flying to LA? Oh boy, so, you know, anything, like I have my chill, though it's valerian root, passion flower, chamomile, melatonin, but not every dog does well with that. But what I would recommend is if they have time, try it first. And that's natural, all natural stuff. Also, L-tryptophan also, all the things that we know are calming. And the other thing you can do is it's not really natural, but it's not a drug. Let's go back to Benadryl. You could try that. Anyway, don't go away. We have more questions to answer. And yes, Carol, yes, you can do Benadryl. It's not going to be 100% effective, but it's going to ease up some of the itching. Don't go away. We're right back after these words from our sponsors here at Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We are back here live on Pet Life Radio. We're just talking about using Clavamox. I love it. The liquid I like a little better, but the liquid, you know, it's really meant 7 days for 1 cc twice a day. It only has 15 cc's in it, so it gets expensive. Pills are cheaper, but you got to do cutting, and they're really not meant to be cut. And if you do cut them, you got to reseal the extra piece or put them in a blue container that's light sensitive. That's going to protect you from the light. They are light sensitive. All right. New tablet. Oh, it's the new tablet. What's it for? Is it for joints? I have to look it up. It's a chondroitin alternative. Okay. Ah, that's good. So that is something that I will have. Do you know who makes it? Motu. What manufacturer? I got to yell at somebody. But I want to look into more. Look, I'm not married to glucosamine. I think that could be expensive. My Flex is much more reasonable than some of the Dasiquin products out there, but I'd like to look into it. All right, so here's a good question. Do I do or recommend, would I recommend non-anesthesia dentals if a dog's teeth have very mild yellowing? So it's not really caked in. Here's what I do, I look at the gums. If the gums are good and it's a young dog who doesn't have a lot of tartar built up and it's a good dog and I can maybe get by with just maybe dextromethorphan or this new drug, then absolutely. It's when you have really bad dental disease and periodontal disease that you need to get under the gums, then I highly recommend. I can't require anything for your dog. You have to make that choice. But I highly advise anesthesia dentals. Now, for those, it's getting expensive. And I'm not as crazy as some of these other places. I'm getting quotes for a basic dental of $1,500, $2,000. It's crazy. But I would do maybe every other. So if you want, if you're really good, I'll tell you the best solution. Start brushing your dog's teeth on a regular basis, at least every other day, if not every day, and you won't need these dentals every 6 months or 4 months. And you know, I'm just telling you, it will make a big difference. It's the only thing of all these things out there and the additives and whatever and the food, the best way to keep your dog's teeth in check is via brushing them. We could talk more about that anytime. So the chill is great for that. I would do that. So I have to look and see if I have chill at my office to buy. Now it says, Sharon, she won't, oh, brushing teeth? Well, you know what? Next time you're in, I will show you my trick. It works 95% of the time. You might be one of the five, but it works like almost 100%. Now, right, so you have four dogs right now brushing their teeth. Well, you know, you do it every other day and do two at a time. So Monday will be two, Tuesday the other two, Wednesday the first two, Thursday, and on, that might be a solution for you. How's Sushi doing, Liz? Okay, yeah, see you soon, Sharon. Absolutely. All right, so we talked about AI, back to AI. So that seems a hot area. We're seeing a lot of it. And then now we're also seeing, I mentioned about the medication that we use for mild sedation. We're seeing a lot, hey, JB, we're seeing a lot of, I would say copycats, that's the wrong term. A lot of companies out there that are seeing a need, and sometimes it's hard. So Philbro, not familiar with them, maybe that's why. It is a glucosamine, 620 milligrams. It's a 9-year-old male Doberman diabetes and seeing some results in flexibility. That's good. I'll look into it. It's not one of the key, I would say key, common pharmaceuticals that we use in veterinary medicine, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, it could be fine. Eloise, small dog or large dog, what age should they be neutered for spay? Okay, now we're getting to a little bit more philosophical discussions. For spay, if it's a small breed and you want to get the most protection from mammary cancer, still doing it as soon as their adult teeth are in, 6 months, 6.5 months, before the first heat is okay. However, I am more of an advocate because of other problems we're seeing in dogs that were spayed before they even had a heat, such as urinary incontinence as they get older. And there may be a correlation or not, but statistically, that's what many of us see. I'd let her have one heat. Now, do we want her to have a second heat? No. Do we want her to be bred on that first heat? No. So the reason for that is the mammary cancer prevention. Is it very, very high if you spay them before the first heat? It does drop a little bit if you let it have one heat, but get them spayed before the second heat. If they have a second heat, whether it's a second heat or fifth or 10th heat, it's not going to make a difference. So it's not like a gradual scale, you know, a little bit less, a little bit. It's like 98% to 88, 90% to 0%. So the max is one heat, but you spay them before the second heat. Do not let them have that second heat. Now, wow, JB, Janice's Xena is 17 years old. That is unbelievable. That is so cool. Wow. I've never had one that old. Many of you know my black lab made it to 16 and a half, which is kind of like 17 for a small breed, but 17. Well, happy birthday to Xena, Janice. That's great. That's great. So now as far as neutering, there are a lot of sex-related maturation that I like to see, more so in the large and giant breeds. So with a small breed, I'll do it as soon as as soon as their adult teeth are in, you can do it. I may, 10 months, 12 months, that's fine. The large breeds, I kind of like to 18 months. And the giant breeds, I kind of like 2 years. Now, that's just me. Now, if someone for some reason wanted to get their giant breed done at a year and a half, that's probably okay. But I want, the thing with the big dogs, they mature more slowly, but they age more quickly. So I want to get that full maturation before I neuter. So we're talking about the giant breeds. You know what they are. I just, for example, had a Dogo in this week, kind of Corsos, Newfoundlands, Brazilian Mastiffs, called Brazilian Feelers. Oh, let's see, Newfies. And there's a breed that I actually saw today, one of my neighbors had, that is a Pyrenean Mastiff. So these are all giant, giant breeds. Great Danes, Irish Wolfhounds, large breeds, the Labradors, the Shepherds, a lot of the hunting dogs, et cetera. That I will do by a year and a half. So, but again, something you got to talk to your vet, see what they say. I'm sure, line up five different veterinarians, you're going to have 10 different opinions. It's just the nature of the beast. So pardon the pun. All right. We have a four-year-old Siberian with dormant FELV. When we first got to our vet, she said it was max 2 years to live. What could we expect? They said it was ADESA. Okay, so if it was FELV, then that is tough. I would say that we see that with FIV. FIV, we were over-worried at the beginning. I've had many cats live on. What we should do, I don't know if it's done since, is, well, first of all, as the old expression goes, don't argue with success. So if things are going well, sit back and relax and enjoy. Was she ever retested as an adult after that terrible diagnosis was made? Because that's what I would do. Sometimes we take these cats very young and test them that have been exposed so their test can show positive, but their own immune system beats the virus, which is what we're looking at in almost every viral case. There's no drugs we can always use. Sometimes there are new antiviral drugs that we're seeing more and more of. But I mean, look, GS441524, what that's done for FIP. I mean, it's literally killing a virus. It's amazing. But if we can prime the body to beat its own virus, that's the answer. So sometimes with these dogs, they weren't mature enough at the first test. And that's why I often wait until at least 4 months, maybe sometimes 5 or 6 months to do the test, because I want to make sure. And even if it comes back positive and the cat's very healthy, I'll do another one in 2 or 3 months just to make sure. So it's an easy test to run, not expensive, can be done in-house. So that's what I'd recommend. All right. Would I get cataract surgery for my dog? Yes, is a short answer, but under conditions. First of all, it depends on the age of the dog, how long the dog's been with the cataracts. Are they truly causing stress and anxiety in the dog? Or if it was a slow progression of disease, then they're usually pretty good. They know where everything is. They pick up the scents. Remember, dogs' eyes are the worst. Their taste is amazing. Hearing is amazing. Their nose is unbelievable. So as far as a sense, a sensory feature, the eyes, could they do without? Yes, I see many, many blind dogs. Now, having said that, if I have a dog with bilateral cataracts, I should preface. If it's only one, I would say hold off. The ophthalmologists want to always do both at the same time. And all they need is one eye. And my feeling is if you do one and it seems to work, great. And if it doesn't work, you can always do the other one. There is obviously, it's going to be less expensive to do both at the same time because you have an extended anesthesia, but it's not a full anesthesia second time around. In my mind, it would be worth it, but if you are ready and want to do both, just so you know, they can do both, but still only one is going to take, one's going to work. Now, also what they're doing when it comes to cataract surgery in dogs, they are implanting a lens. So they're taking out the cataractus lens, implanting a new lens. And interestingly, some of these dogs, therefore, because they have, remember, dogs' lenses were not that great. So now they're getting a lens that's better so they can see better with that implanted lens than they ever could before the cataract surgery or before the cataract even developed. So, I mean, there's something to it. I would speak to a veteran ophthalmologist, get, you know, all the good news, the bad news, all the down and dirty, and then and the costs involved, and then make a decision. Oh, Nala. Nala's great. Oh my God, Blake, thanks for asking. Nala did, that was a very large pit bull that had American pit bull across, I think it was. Anyway, had a terrible pio, and the pio ruptured. It was like, it was such a mess. We put drains, we flushed the abdomen a zillion times. We always say dilution is the solution to pollution. So when you have a septic abdomen and you want to flush it and flush it, try to get all that bacteria out. Anyway, she did great. Thanks for asking. She still doesn't love us very much, but she did amazingly well. Life with Corgis, hello, hello. She's been retested twice and has been dormant ever since. We haven't retested since she was 2. She's 4 now. You can do one more test, but let's put it this way. Because she's doing well, is the result of that test going to change anything? If it comes back negative, you'll be happier, but it's not going to change. Her life's just living as long as you want her to. If the test comes back positive still, but she's been dormant and acting fine, then nothing you can do anyway. So I'm a firm believer when you are thinking about taking a test of any kind, unless you have this burning desire to know the answer. But it's just, you know, you can take it as long as you know that if you're not going to change. That's why I'm kind of against, not against, I don't push people into brain MRIs. Because if there's something going on that you've narrowed it down and it seems like it's coming from the brain and you do an MRI, what's it going to show you? It shows you a lesion. Now what are you going to do? If you're going to do radiation, if you would consider some sort of surgical procedure, if it's even surgical, then yes, do the test. But if you said, no, I'm not going to spend thousands of dollars on radiation, I'm not going to do a brain surgery, whatever it is, then unless you have a burning desire to know, don't waste your money on the test. All right, next up, Vanderpumps. Hi, guys. We were just talking about you this weekend. Seven going blind. Yeah, no, if it's cataract, it already is blind. But yes, if that's what your goal is, then of course, talk to the ophthalmologist, get the one eye, two eyes, whatever, and proceed. If the dog was miserable because of it, proceed. But if the dog was getting along, and like the old joke, just don't change around the furniture. But if they are manipulating, they're getting through everything, they're happy, they're going on their walks, then most of the times, unless they're a diabetic cataract, we see them when they get a cataract as a very old dog. So you got to keep that in mind as well. See your dog's eyes. Well, it depends. Drops for what? If there's some sort of conjunctivitis, if there's discharge, yes, there are drops. Are there drops to help slow down cataract formation? Someone told me there is something out there. I can look into it, but that's a question for another show. All right. Recommend surgery to large dogs so they don't get that flip belly. Okay, so you're looking at GDV, gastric dilatation volvulus, which causes that big bloat. It is potentially deadly if you don't get to it soon enough. On a routine basis, God, if it's been in the family line, then I would. During a spay, 100%. Offer it. That's the best time to do it because you already have the abdomen opened. It's extending the incision cranial just a little bit. You tack the right side of the stomach to the right body wall, and that will keep it locked so it can't flip. That, a no-brainer. A neuter, especially now that we're doing laser neuters, we're doing them in the scrotum, it's a whole nother surgery, and it makes it more expensive. Is it wrong? Absolutely not. However, I will tell you, and I don't do it, but some of the facilities now can do it with the laparoscope. So they could do a laparoscopic tacking of the stomach to the body wall, which is expensive, but is much less on the body as far as the strain on the body. You're not doing a full abdominal incision. You're not digging in there. You're moving stuff out of the way. And so if money was no object or it was within a budget that you can handle and you wanted to do it, I would recommend laparoscopic. That's a really good question. You know what? Blake, my cousin is a retired cat vet. He was one of the first veterinarians in the country to go all feline. At the time, people thought he was nuts. And now it's not common, but there are dozens upon hundreds of feline-only practitioners across the country. Let me call them. That would be a great question to ask. And then I'll get back to you. Normal for senior dog's eyes become a bit lighter. Okay, yes, that we're talking about. That's a normal age change called lenticular or nuclear sclerosis. It's a scarring of the lens capsule. The capsule gets a little thicker. It reflects their first light. Not all the light penetrates through. So we see that lightest blue-gray haze when you look at the pupil. That's normal. So yeah, not worried. In order for that, in normal cases, I mean, there are exceptions to every rule, as you know, but in normal cases, my tagline is, in order for that process to completely obstruct vision, to form a cataract. It's a pre-cataractous condition by definition, because it's involving the lens, but it's not the inside lens, it's the lens capsule. But anyway, the dog would have to live to about 35 or 40. So obviously that's not going to happen, so we don't usually worry about it. I would not recommend any kind of surgery if the only problem is, and these dogs don't get blind. What you might notice in low light, they might have some vision impairment, but they're basically okay. And remember, when you come in house at night, they're not looking at you, they're smelling you. Okay, I think I waved to everybody. And you guys have been great today. Thanks for coming on an hour later. I do appreciate it. Thank you, Pet Life Radio. Thank you, Mark, for hanging out there with me and let me go overboard. And next Sunday, we will be here. Yes, same time, same channel, here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. Thank you so much for being a part of the show today. And oh my God, what's the most rewarding? That's it. I'll have to think about that, Blake. We'll talk about it next week. I wrote my most rewarding case that reminded me of why I wanted to become a vet. I mean, we can talk about it. I'll tell you one next week, okay? Very good. See you guys next week. Have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.